Everyone, welcome to Strong Mind, Strong Body. I'm your host, Angie Miller. And today I have a very special guest named Lauren Reedy. She is a five-time Emmy Award winner, and she owns Forever Ready Productions. But here's the deal. We are going to talk about the cost of inaction, what it costs us to be stuck in this place where we think we want to do something, but we're not sure that it's the right decision or the right time. So many times this indecision drives anxiety and fear to the point where we can stay stuck for so long that we can miss out on huge, powerful opportunities. So Lauren she is just such a delight to listen to. She has so many amazing stories, and Lauren has some great stories about her journey through indecision to acting now. So I'm going to bring Lauren into the show and have her introduce herself. How are you doing, Lauren?
Hi, Angie. It's so great to see you today.
It's good to see you. Did I say Lauren Reddy or Lauren Reedy?
I don't know, but I go by either. It's technically Reedy, but my company's Forever Ready. So I just respond to both.
There you go. That makes it easy. So Lauren, you and I, we know each other because we have met through a kind of speaker mastermind group that we're in, and I've heard you speak. I love your stories. And so I also know that you have days as a TV reporter. Just curious, tell us a little bit about how you went from a TV reporter to a business owner.
Yeah. Well, I started working in television when I was in high school. I was 17 years old. And I took a job as a production assistant. Back then, cameras were not robots. So I ran cameras. I hold the sides of the camera. I ran cameras during the newscast. I was a floor director. So I would direct people which camera to look at. And I sorted scripts and gave them to the anchors. So I spent my entire senior year of high school in a newsroom every day, working the 5, 6, and 10 o'clock newscasts. And I knew I started because I wanted to go into meteorology. But if you're listening and you know anything about science, it also involves lots of math, and meteorology specifically was not my wheelhouse. So I quickly pivoted from this idea of being a meteorologist to a sports and news reporter. And I discovered that all my life I had been telling stories in this really fun way. I was taking a camera everywhere when I was in high school. I was taking photos and shooting video before we had it on our cell phones. And so I decided to pursue a degree in journalism. I got a degree, actually, it was in media studies, but I was a TV reporter. And I worked in Iowa, Nebraska, and Tennessee for a decade. I was on air. I covered just about every single shift you can think of. So if you've gotten up in the morning to get your morning forecast for the day, and seen breaking news, I've done the middays, I've done evenings, your 5, 6, and 10 o'clock. And so I did everything from feature reporting to investigative to responding to chasing tornadoes or breaking news. And I loved it. I had a plan. You know how plans can go. I had a plan to go all the way to the networks. I wanted to be Katie Couric and be on the Today Show and report from all these big major events happening in the country and in the world. And I got to Memphis in 2013, and about, 18 months into that job, I started to feel this really strange pull. I want to pursue this dream. It's always been on my dream card. Like, it's always been on my dream board. You know, Caitlin Clark was just the first round of the draft yesterday. And I thought to myself, I used to write these kinds of dreams. Mine said to be on the Today Show, and hers said to be in the WNBA. So I felt really tied to this dream that I shared with everybody. But then I started to experience a shift, and I wanted to tell stories that were less kind of turn and burn daily news stories and tell more in-depth stories that call people to do something, that call them to act, that call them to change, that call them to make a difference in their community. And I was not being... That wasn't being accomplished in news. And so I made the really tough decision to pivot from one dream to the next, is what I tell people. And I didn't give up. That's what I kind of thought I did for a while. I just changed course. And Forever Ready Productions has now been running for 10 years. I've been out of news fully for 8 years. And a lot of things led up to that decision, which we'll talk about in this podcast. But that trajectory changed because I realized there was a value misalignment. The goals didn't change. The way with which I was doing it changed. And I think that's a really important piece of my story, but also of everyone's story. When you change path, it doesn't necessarily mean you failed. In fact, most failures can turn into really positive experiences. So I'm so happy to be doing this work now. I lead a team that is about to be nine people across three cities. And now we tell stories for nonprofits that call people to action. And so I'm doing a lot of the same work I was doing back then in just a very different medium.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. I think you said a couple of powerful things. And the first one is that you worked in Iowa. I mean, that's powerful in and of itself. We should stop and take a pause now because I grew up in Iowa. So, hey, there's that.
Now, where at in Iowa? That's the real question.
What's that?
Where at in Iowa?
I grew up in the Quad Cities.
Okay. So, Cedar Rapids was where I was from. I know exactly where you grew up.
There you go. That's powerful. So, but I also think that you said a couple of key points, and that is that so many times we get on a path and we have these big goals and we don't ever go that direction and something gets in the way. And a lot of times we go, gosh, I epically failed myself on that one. I never did this or I never did that. And I think that sometimes we have to take a pause and recognize maybe I didn't do those things or that thing, but I did do X, Y, Z. And to your point, you started to recognize when you were in news that there was a values misalignment. And I think that sometimes that it is about, we think we're going to go a direction, we realize that our values don't align. But I also think it's fair to say that sometimes we think we're going to go a direction, we dip our toes in it a little bit, and then we go, I'm not sure that's actually going to speak to me the way that I thought it would speak to me. Right. And instead of getting lost in blame and shame, what if we step back and go, and I got to do this and this as a result of the fact that I didn't go the direction that I thought I was going to go, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think about that a lot because when there's something big happening and I'm not on the front lines of it, that is one time when I miss being in journalism. But I think about how you can still accomplish goals in the same, you can still accomplish goals in sort of the same arena without doing it the way you thought. So one of my big goals as a journalist was to win an Emmy. I wanted my peers to recognize my work in a way that was like powerful. And I, you know, let's face it, it'd be cool to have a golden statue, right? And all of my time in news, I entered the Emmys and never once was I nominated. I was so disappointed. And I thought when I made this big change that that would never happen again, like that dream, that ship had sailed. And that's not the case, as you mentioned in the in the intro about me. I didn't think that that's how this would go. And here we are many years later, and I could say I'm a 5-time Emmy Award winner. That's not something I thought would happen the way that it has. And if I had really just given up, I wouldn't have opened the opportunity for this to happen in this way. So I think it's important for us to sort of reframe things. And instead of focusing on it as a failure or as I'm walking away, or I used to think even people who left the business, oh, they just can't handle it. You know, they just can't handle the stress and anxiety and sometimes toxic environment you work in. But the truth is, it's not that they can't handle it. It's that they're being called to something else and they can still accomplish the goals that they set, maybe just in a different way.
Well, and I do think that there's something to be said for calling. For many years, I thought that I wanted a health and fitness show. I thought that I wanted to do a morning show mostly geared toward women where I would do movement, but I would also talk a lot about mindset and how to manage stress, how to set healthy boundaries, to speak to women in the way that I love to do in fitness and in mental health. But I truly never went and did anything to authentically pursue that, what I thought was a dream. I did enough checking and digging to recognize that maybe that wouldn't be a good space for me to be in the world of television. And then fast forward, I started speaking more, getting in front of audiences, and now I have this podcast, which to me is now my show. And so I do think that we can live our dreams in a different light or a different lens than what we thought it was going to look like and still feel very amazing. But I have a question for you because we're talking about ways that we've acted that have been different from how we thought we were going to act. But we need to talk about this whole anxiety and fear of indecision, because truth is, I can get caught in it. I can get caught in indecision and have so much gripping anxiety about it. And yes, some people will say, and I've said to my clients before, hey, sometimes not making a decision is making a decision. Totally. We're deciding not to decide yet.
Yeah.
And there's that. And then there's also the fact that you can be there a year from now, 2 years from now. And so what do we do to then make small decisions in between where we feel like we're making progress? Because to me, those decisions give me a sense of control. So I was in the grips of a huge decision over this past year and a half, and it seemed to just be weighing on me too heavy. And then I started to take small steps to get me closer to making a decision. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, I have my power back now. I have my power back because I'm making decisions that will lead to the big decision and help me get there. So how do you, what kind of questions, maybe first you should tell us one thing, because I think it'll give context. I know your story about leaving the world of news, and you've kind of shared it. And then you talked about your big decision about your child. Yes. And I would love if you could kind of walk us through that a little bit.
Sure.
And then I think it will help us get to how we learn to act.
Yeah, well, I can absolutely talk about that. I think one thing I want to start with is the real key to me about action is thinking about what you want your future to look like. And so when you think and you imagine and you write down, even if that's not how it plays out, it's easier to make a decision once you've thought about what you would do in a certain scenario, right? So every decision that I've made, whether it's career or personal, honestly, I've made because I have thought about what it might look like. And so when I get to that crossroad, I'm able to say, okay, this is what I was talking about. What happens here? So the story that's really personal about our son and how he came into our life is that my husband and I, we struggled with infertility for years. And we're trying to figure out what we wanted to do next. Do we want to keep, you know, trying? Do we want to invest in IVF? What are our options here? And I'd always sort of felt on my heart that adoption would be a route that I would be interested in. Because honestly, when I wanted to be a Today Show correspondent, I thought I'd be married at 35 and single. So like, I really didn't think that kids would be in my future. And so when I fell in love, that changed. And so when we came to this point, my husband and I both looked at each other and said, adoption seems to be what we feel like we're called to. What does that look like? And we agreed to sort of open our hearts, which meant, of course, we were heartbroken twice with situations that didn't work out. But when we got the call about our son, we were able to rationally in the moment have a conversation about what we envisioned and how it aligned with our values and what we said we were going to do, which was to open our hearts and home to a child and to love them no matter what. And so when we got the call about our son, Max, who's now 5, almost 6, the decision to say yes came really quickly because we had talked about what it would look like. We had talked about what kinds of scenarios would make sense. And we were able to say yes and hop on a plane the next day. Now, I'm not saying that everybody can do that, but what I am saying is, imagine if we had said, ooh, we need to think about this a little bit more. Ooh, we need a little bit more time. We wouldn't be in the shoes that we're in now. And so I think so often I use that as a compass, and it's an extreme case scenario, right? But the reason why we were able to take that leap in that moment is because we had talked about it. We had envisioned what it might look like. This is not what we thought it would look like, but because we had values, vision, and those two things came into alignment, we were able to say, heck yes, we're on our way. Yeah. And I think that helps, that personal example helps kind of explain how I make decisions in the first place, which is going to what's the worst case scenario about this scenario? What is the worst thing that could possibly happen? And then once you go there, you say, okay, what happens if that happens? What am I going to do if the worst case scenario happens? And then you think, how likely is that worst case scenario to happen? More often than not, it's actually very unlikely. Now, I will say in our adoption process, the worst case scenario happened twice. But when you go all the way to the edge, then it's like you're imagining yourself there. And then it makes the decision easier.
Yeah.
And then you think, okay, well, if that doesn't happen, then what do I do? And so that's sort of the process that I run through. What is the absolute worst thing that could happen? Will it happen? What are the chances of it? What will I do if it does? And if not, what's the action? And that can apply across the board with so many things. And that's how my husband and I come to decisions all the time. He's also my business partner. So when we're thinking about expanding, when we're thinking about, you know, adding a new service, those are the questions we're asking. And it kind of shakes you of the anxiety. Sure, there's plenty of anxiety still around on decisions. But when you go all the way to the edge and then you really analyze whether that's likely and then what your plan is if it is, yeah, it kind of clears things a little bit. It makes you have a clearer vision of what to do forward.
Well, and I appreciate you sharing that. And I know your story about Max, and I've seen pictures of Max, and I think that that's an amazing story. And what you didn't tell them was the dirty details of where you were when you got called. We don't need to go there. But Lauren, first I want to just reintroduce you. So my name is Angie, and this is Strong Mind, Strong Body. I'm talking to Lauren Reedy, and we are talking about staying stuck. What does inaction cost us inevitably? And, you know, outside of that anxiety and that fear of just feeling like you're standing in quicksand and you don't know where to go. And so, Lauren, what I really heard you say is one of the first things that you ask yourself is, what do I want my future to look like? And I do think that that's key, because anytime you're making a decision, obviously decisions are usually big, powerful decisions lead into what our lives are eventually going to look like. And so that's a key question. What do I actually want my life to look like? Forget about my decision, mm-hmm. but create, you know, kind of paint this picture. And then you said you go to what's the worst case scenario, which of course is something I teach my clients in therapy. Yeah. What's the worst case scenario? And then often it's about calling your own bluff,
right?
Because usually worst case scenario is, gosh, what my mind creates and what worst case scenario could actually be. My mind is much more imaginative and, if right. you will, dark.
Yeah, so sure.
So then
I think most people are not, they don't share yeah. the dark part, but a lot of people's internal thoughts are that way. And, you know, yeah. I will say that I, not just in personal, but in business, the worst case scenario has happened, you know, a complete turnover of staff, absolutely in the negative quarter from a revenue perspective, health issues, those things do happen. And I think going to the edge of the imaginative, what's the worst, makes it, if it happens, not a surprise. I've already thought about this. In fact, I've thought about it to the point where I know what I'm going to do now. And I have a little bit of hope in that, because I know that I've thought through at least what I would do if this happened. Okay, now it's happened. What can I do to get out of it so that I'm not stuck in the inaction of the fact that it happened, right? This is yeah. all theoretical, but that's how I apply it.
Well, it's almost like we're writing our own stories. We're writing stories about what we want our future to look like. We're writing our own story. And then we're writing a story about what happens if my future doesn't look that way. And then we're writing a story about, okay, well, then what would I do? If I were a character in this book, of this story that I'm writing, what would I do as a character if this were to happen to me? And you mentioned kind of going to the edge of the cliff. I think the key is to remember that we can go to the edge of the cliff. It doesn't mean we're going to fall off. It just
means
that
we should stay there.
What's that?
Or that we should stay there.
Right. It just means we're going to get to the edge and we're going to have to back up a minute, right. Sit down, wipe away our tears, call on our support system, and rewrite our story, change the next, you know, the direction that we're going to go next. But to your point, how likely is it worst case scenario? Probably not very likely, but also to your point, yes, worst case scenario can come to fruition. It absolutely can and often does. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned when it does, then you go, okay, Lauren, you've thought about this and it did happen. And now I have to, or you have to decide, what do I do? How do I act? What did I write in my story that I would do? Right. And so I think that that's very powerful when you think about all those things kind of put together.
Well, and you know, my whole mission is to tell stories that call people to action. And what I realized in that is that they're my stories too. Right? My stories can call me to action, or they can make me stuck. And I think often that is a reflection directly of what we consume and what we watch and who we follow and if there's someone doing what we'd like to do. And so when I feel stuck, I ask myself, what stories am I telling myself? What stories am I consuming that are making me feel this stuck way? And is there someone out there doing what I'd like to do? And if so, should I be following them to learn or model or start to set what my vision looks like? And I think the stories we tell ourselves is really where it starts. Externally, certainly, but in our minds, man, they are powerful. And if we can figure out how to tell a better story to ourselves about what we want and about our future and about what it would take to get there, then you start to apply these small little everyday things that you're talking about, right? So the first response to the worst case scenario can't be, you know, inaction. It has to be, what's the first thing I can do right now? What's the one thing I can do to fix it today? What's the one thing I can do to make it better? And you know that in a fitness journey, right? We don't lose 20 pounds on day three, right? It takes small little increments. It takes habit changes. There are small little pieces to make the big picture. And I think it's the same when you're struggling to decide how to act or what action to take. Is a small step every day helps you get to the other side. And then eventually you look and say, wow, I not only got through that worst case scenario, but now I'm here and I'm better for it. And the experience that I got through that is going to shape how I plan for the next one and how I continue to move forward.
Well, and I think that there's so many, you know, if you get on Google and you're like, how do I make a decision? There's always a 10-step process or a 5-step process or a 3-step process. I mean, there's all kinds of information about how to make a decision. But I think what I really wanted to talk about today is what you and I are talking about. And so much of this is driven by our values and our vision, but also about the stories that we're telling ourselves. It's on a deeper level because a lot of times we're in a place where we need to make a big decision because something in our life is not aligning with our values. And we know we're uncomfortable and we can't quite, what I find a lot of times too, when I get stuck in indecision or when my clients get stuck in indecision, what they end up doing, and it's kind of ironic, but it makes sense, is they end up trying to control everything else. I call it the perimeter stuff. They try to fix and control everything around the perimeter as if getting their life tidied up in all the ways is going to make them feel better. But if they never get to the core issue, that thing that's going against their value system, that job that's making them not want to go to it every day, or that relationship that is costing them sleep, or whatever it is, that big barrier, if it's not dealt with, it's going to stay right in the middle of the road. And you can fix all the perimeter, but the barrier, the big boulder that's not moving, is still going to stay there. And you're not going to chip away at it until you chip away at it.
Right.
And so I think our biggest discomforts and our hardest decisions come from things that don't align with our value system.
And what's really interesting about that is that sometimes you can be good at something and it's still not aligned with your value system.
Yes.
Like, and that can also keep you stuck because you spend time. I mean, that was me in news. Like, I was good at it. I liked responding to in the moment things. And I struggled so much, not only because it was a dream, but because I was good at it. And I thought, well, if I'm good at it, shouldn't I just do it, keep doing it? Like, why would I leave if I'm good at it? And so I think even if the value alignment feels like, well, I'm good at this, doesn't always mean that you're meant to stay there. And I think the key for what we're both talking about here is really going deep and being honest with yourself. Because once I did that and thought, well, what's the disconnect here? Then I realized I have a strong desire to serve, and this is not allowing me to serve in the way that I can best serve. That service is one of my core values. So that is something that drives everything that I do. And I felt limited and unable to serve in the way that I felt was impactful. And once I identified that, it was like, okay, just because you're good at this doesn't mean you should keep doing it.
You know, I'm really glad you said that because I think that that's a huge one. Because a lot of people in a lot of spaces, they are very successful. Mm-hmm. But think about the people we know who were big CEOs or just making all the money. And then they found that they weren't happy. Right. Just because they were good at it didn't mean that it was bringing them joy or that it wasn't driving its own form of anxiety because it went against the grain of their true purpose in life. And I know everyone's done with the word purpose. If you talk to me about purpose, but the truth is values and purpose go hand in hand. And if it's not aligning with that, think about even in relationships, your relationship can be good in many, many ways. And there can be big barriers that go against your value system or don't make you feel grounded in that relationship. And that's what can make it difficult for people to pull away from relationships or jobs because they can intellectualize all the good things.
Oh, certainly. Just the like job, you can.
Yeah, the job pays me well. I like the people I work with. I'm good at it. Yeah. And yet I'm not serving the world the way that I thought I would. Or the relationship, you know, we communicate well and we have fun. Right. And there might be things that are just true barriers that go against what you think a relationship could look like for you. And so I think part of the difficulty of decisions is what you just targeted is that it's not always going to be all bad. It's not in your face bad, or those wouldn't be difficult decisions.
Right, right.
Those are the easy decisions, right?
Exactly. Most of the time.
Yeah. The in your face bad decisions are right. pretty, you know, typical. So you mentioned values, you mentioned vision, you also mentioned models. And I wanted to kind of go back to that because having good models for what it is that we think we want to accomplish or how we think our life, how we want our life to look like. When you said kind of create that story for how you want your life to look, I think it does pay to look around and go, I kind of like my life to look like Susie Q's or mm-hmm. Timmy's life or whoever it might be, not from a place of comparison, but from a place of the life that they're living and the values that they're abiding by align with mine.
Absolutely.
What do you think? Is that a good way to describe models or using models?
Yeah, I was actually going to say, don't spend too much time on what I call Comparison Canyon. It is a devastating place to spend your time. What a visual, right? You're like looking out at everyone. I think it's helpful because if you've identified your values and you're shaping your vision, you can run your values and vision against what you see others doing. So there are lots of people who I could model what I'm doing and admire parts of what they're doing. But if I have this lens of values and what are the things that drive me, it's almost like a compass. Then I can say, I really like some of the things about the way this person is doing it, but some of the things don't align with my values. And I think that having that gives you the ability to form your own unique and not have to feel like you're imitating someone else. Although let's be honest, we all take in information. Nothing is original. Everything I just told you is stuff I've read in Stoicism and, you know, all kinds of business books. So nothing we're doing is original, but the tools we have, especially defining our own vision and values, can help us compare to others in a way that makes us confident. Okay, I love that. That doesn't really align with what my values are. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a really important distinction here because it can also cross the line, right? Comparison can cross the line and so can judgment. So if you're too stringent about your values against someone else's, then you can find yourself being judgmental of the way someone else is doing something or the action that they've taken versus what you would have. So I try really hard to sort of unbiasedly look at that and then compare to what aligns with what I would want to do. The real key there is to also revisit that. So are my values the same as they were 10 years ago? I'd like to say they are. At the core, at the foundation, sure. But there's some new ones that I've picked up along the way because I've recognized, oh, I really value this about something. For example, I really value initiative. Someone who takes initiative, I like to take initiative. That is now a part of my own personal values. That wasn't a part of my values 10 years ago because I didn't really know that about myself. And there's some things that I've taken off my list of values over the years because I realized that's not actually something that I value. But having that compass gives you a roadmap of sorts to make absolutely every decision in your life. And I've just found it to be so valuable to use it almost like a reference guide. How does this apply and how does it align with my values? And if you haven't done a values exercise, I think that's the first place to start is what do I value? What's important to me? What things really make me tick? And then how does that align with the vision I have for my life? Then you start using that to help you make decisions from the get-go.
You know, and I did a podcast. I'll have to look back. Maybe we can put in our show notes. I did a podcast about doing values exercises and how we kind of live a life aligned with our own personal values. But you know, it's interesting that you said that about the whole comparison thing. I went to a retreat this past weekend, and one of the things that stood out to me was a conversation about how when we are we're triggered by someone, and how we call it activated. And there's a whole story around why we don't use trigger anymore, but we call it activated. When somebody activates you, when you hear something they say or see something they do, and you feel a little activated, like, and you get caught up in judgment. A lot of times it's a reflection on where you are. And it's your own voice saying, you know, creating doubt because maybe they're doing something you didn't do, or it's a sticking point for you, you know? So it's often not about the other person. It's actually comes back to you, which is why we use the word activated instead of triggered, because when we say that triggered me, it's like, we're a victim. You triggered me because you said X, Y, Z, but if I'm activated, it's because of something that's within me that is picking up on something you said or did that is more about my journey than yours. And I thought that was a great way of putting it. But I do think that values is the core. And I think that vision is the core in writing stories for ourselves. And I think that any day it's better than a 10-step action-making decision plan, because often those don't really get to the core issue of why am I unhappy, even if all the things are fairly good. Right. And how do I get to the core of why this is still going against the grain of who I am? So, Lauren, before we kind of sign off, is there anything else you'd want to say about the cost of inaction or any other thing that you might do that helps you make a decision? Or do you think we got there?
Well, I think we got there really, really well. But I guess I would give two sort of parting thoughts for our viewers today. And the first one is, instead of looking around you for the stories you might be telling yourself, I would look right in front of you, because so often the things that are blocking us are right in front of us, and they're just like a part of our everyday routine. So we don't see them as extraordinary. We don't see them as a block. We don't necessarily even see them as a story worth telling anyone. I often tell our nonprofits we work with on the video production side, the story you should be telling happens to you every day right in front of you, and you're not sharing it because it's ordinary. So I would say to look right in front of you. There's probably something right in front of you that's blocking you from taking action. And then the second thing is, you know, it can feel really big and overwhelming to say, well, this is my dream, this is my vision, but that's like 10 years from now. So the question I think to ask ourselves today is, what's one thing I can do in the next 7 days to get me one step closer to the way I envision things to be? It might be refreshing my resume. It might be doing something creative. It might simply be sitting down and reading, you know, but what's one thing I can do in the next 7 days that helps me be able to take action when I need to? And from there, if you do that every week and you ask yourself that question every week, before you know it, you're going to look back and say, wow, look how far I've come.
Yeah. I like the next right step. I have a coach who always says, what's your next right step or your next right move? And I think that's so true. And I still make a hard copy checklist. And often I do it because I want to be able to cross that out and know what I've accomplished, so that I know that I am taking action steps every day that make a difference. Yeah. So Lauren, thank you so much for coming on. If people want to get a hold of you for any kind of storytelling in the form of film, can you just give us a quick way to reach you?
Absolutely. You can email me, which is lauren@foreverreadyllc.com. But you can also find me on Instagram @laurenisready. Angie, you ask how to say my last name. That's confusing. But @laurenisready is a good place to connect with me. I'm also on LinkedIn, Lauren Reedy. And I'm always responding. So if you have any questions or you want to know more about your story or video production in general, I'm here for it.
Fantastic. I've seen your work and you do an amazing job. So thanks to all of our Strong Mind, Strong Body listeners. I do hope that this helps you get out of inaction and into your next right step. We'll see you next week.